for a look at where things stand with the spread of COVID-19 across Tampa Bay and the state of Florida, I'm joined by Dr. Jason Salemi, epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of South Florida College of Public Health and the Morsani College of Medicine. Dr. Salemi, thanks so much for coming on the show. So where are we at right now? Cases, hospitalizations, deaths, what's the latest?
Yeah, I think there's really some good news on several fronts. First, you know, since hitting a peak of nearly 22,000 new infections per day in mid to late August, we've been on a pretty pronounced decline since then. Our average daily cases over the past 7 days have been below 13,000, which is a 42% decrease from that high. And after leading the nation in new infections per capita for quite a while, we now rank 12th highest. Not something to be excited about, but certainly an improvement. But more importantly, the decline has been observed in all age groups. The first week we had a decrease in adults, it was coupled with an increase in children. And that was in part because they were going back to school. Sure. There was a lot of transmission going on. But because these kids were quarantined a lot, their parents got them tested. And so we were probably picking up a lot of infections in kids that we typically would not have, just because testing rose so sharply among kids. But now the decrease more recently has been pronounced for all ages. And even though children do have the highest infection rates per capita compared to other age groups, it's a good trend that the cases are coming down. And it's not just been cases, it's also positivity. Positivity has decreased from 20% to 13.5%. That's nothing to be happy about. Remember, we want that number at about 5% or ideally even lower. But it's certainly better than where we've been. And we continue to test more than 100,000 people each day on average in Florida.
Wow.
And I think the best news in all of this is the substantial reductions in more severe illness from COVID-19. In adults in mid-August, we had peaked at about 2,200 confirmed COVID-19 hospital admissions every single day. That's a lot of people being admitted. Now we're at 1,163 per day. That's a 47% decrease from just a few weeks ago. But this is where we're at, you know, pretty much where we're at right now is where we were at the peak of the winter surge. So there's still a lot of work left to be done, even though we're heading in the right direction. And, you know, I would also point out that the number of adults sitting in an inpatient bed, like right now, went from 17,000 to just over 10,000 now. And the number of adults in an ICU has decreased by 1,000 people from over 3,700 to now about 2,700. Finally, with new admissions in kids, we've gone from nearly 70 kids being hospitalized every day with confirmed COVID to more recently going down to 46 per day. That's still not great when we were at about 6 kids being hospitalized per day statewide in the pre-Delta era. But, you know, we were, again, leading the nation for a while in both adult and pediatric hospitalizations per capita. But now we rank 8th highest in adults and 3rd highest in kids. And finally, deaths are a different story.
Yeah.
We're in this odd place where cases, positivity, hospitalizations are decreasing while deaths are still increasing. But the deaths that we're learning about now are mainly from cases and hospitalizations from the peak of our surge during Delta. But just to show you how much, despite the vaccines, how much deaths have increased, our previous 7-day peak was 228 deaths per day in the summer surge of last year. Our current Delta peak is at 317 COVID-19 deaths per day, or 39% higher. And again, that's just astonishing considering the effectiveness of right. COVID-19 vaccines. And so a lot of work that we still need to do. It's good that 83% of our seniors are fully vaccinated in the state, but only 59% of those aged 18 to 64 41% age 12 to 17. So obviously a lot more work to continue to get people vaccinated.
With the COVID update for Tampa Bay and the state of Florida, I'm joined by Dr. Jason Salemi, epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of South Florida College of Public Health and the Morsani College of Medicine. These reductions that we're seeing, is it because of an increase in the vaccination rate here in the state of Florida? Is it just that the Delta variant has run wild across the state? So, you know, more and more people having been infected with it, now the numbers are just naturally starting to come down. Is it a combination of the two?
I would love to believe that it had a lot to do with the actions that we are taking. But to be perfectly honest, if you look at what happened in India or the UK, I think because Delta has been so transmissible, it has infected so many people that it's becoming increasingly difficult for the virus to find a lot of pockets of still susceptible people. Even though there are a lot of people that are not fully vaccinated, I think there are a lot of people who have been infected with this Delta variant in the past 8 weeks. And so I think that's primarily why we're starting to see a decline. And again, remember, I think we almost got desensitized to how many cases we were seeing. So now that we're on the decline, it almost looks like the numbers are great, but I would still caution people that hospitalizations and cases, again, are still about where they, you know, at the highest point that they were pre-Delta. So we're still not in a good state, but I think the numbers have declined just because of how many people now either have vaccine-acquired immunity or natural immunity because they were infected.
What should we be concerned about moving forward, and what should we potentially be optimistic about at this point?
I think continued outbreaks is something I still worry about. All of those people who are not fully vaccinated and the extent to which they'll continue to experience the worst of what this virus continues to inflict. I worry about people who are immune compromised and in whom the vaccine may not be as effective. As long as community spread is still this high, those kind of people are still at very high risk. And this is why I certainly support a booster shot for people with conditions that decrease the effectiveness of their body's ability to defend itself. Another thing I worry about is kids. You know, there's 2.8 million kids in Florida who cannot be protected yet through a COVID-19 vaccine, including my own son. And, you know, that's because the vaccine has only been approved for people 12 years of age and older. And, you know, it's really at this point, it's not just severe illness in kids, because that's still somewhat rare, but it's the disruption of their learning. It's great to have them back in-person learning. But, you know, as a parent, I want the school to be able to use ventilation, filtration, masking, vaccination, making sure people stay home when they're sick, you know, that layered approach to mitigation that will keep our kids not only safe, but to prevent them from having to be sent home to be quarantined and have their learning continue to be disrupted. I worry about global vaccination efforts. Everybody's right. Heard, you know, no one's safe until we're all safe. You know, these variants that emerge, like the Mu variant, a lot of that is because we not only have high transmission still in the United States, but because so many areas across the world have such low vaccination rates and in which this virus can continue to not only do damage, but to continue mutating and increase the likelihood of variants. And of course, it is variants like Mu that do, you know, cause me some concern. This is something that we should continue to expect as long as global vaccination efforts remain a challenge. This is in part how the virus fights back against what we're trying to do. And, you know, early evidence suggests that there are mutations on this Mu variant that can make it more able to reduce the effectiveness of our immune systems. But right now, Delta makes up nearly every case in the United States. People are exhausted from dealing with Delta. And, you know, a lot of the recommendations that we would make to prevent something like Mu is the same thing that we would argue will prevent Delta. The vaccines still seem very effective against all variants so far. So even though I'm concerned about, you know, prospective variants, right now we've got our hands full with Delta. And finally, you know, the last thing that I'd like to see is, you know, what are our goals with COVID-19? I think ultimately, as we come out of this Delta surge, we're going to need to learn how to live with COVID-19. And I think understanding exactly what our goals are, is it zero COVID cases, which of course is unrealistic, or right, is it getting to extremely low rates of severe illness? You know, that should influence our policies. Otherwise, everyone is just a little confused about really where we're headed and what it all means. So the good news is that we should be past the worst of the Delta surge in Florida. And, you know, I can't say that for other parts of the United States right now.
I'm joined by Dr. Jason Salemi, epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of South Florida College of Public Health and the Morsani College of Medicine. He's offering a COVID update for us for Tampa Bay and the state of Florida. The vaccines, we're learning more and more about them as more and more people get vaccinated. And also there's a longer time from when Americans were first vaccinated to where they are now. What can you tell us about the latest information and data on the safety and effectiveness of the vaccines?
Yeah, so I think we've had a big blessing that they are both safe and effective. We see much lower rates of severe illness in people who are fully vaccinated. And let's take, for example, some of the newer data on kids that was released by the CDC. We obviously by now know that kids can get severely ill from COVID-19, even though it's important to remember that the likelihood of hospitalization for a child infected with the Delta variant still remains relatively small. But the CDC recently reported that hospitalization rates among unvaccinated children aged 12 to 17 were 10 times higher than hospitalization rates among vaccinated children aged 12 to 17. And it's not just getting them vaccinated, because remember, kids younger than 12 can't be protected, but community vaccination or, right, you know, the rate of vaccination among all vaccine eligible age groups, that also appears to be extremely important to protecting children younger than 12. States in the lowest quartile of vaccination coverage had nearly four times higher pediatric hospitalization rates compared to states in the highest quartile of vaccination coverage. So surrounding kids younger than 12 with people in communities who are fully vaccinated seems to decrease both the likelihood they'll become infected and the likelihood that they'll become hospitalized. And in fact, I recently worked with the New York Times on an analysis that showed how strongly state-level vaccination rates were associated with much lower hospitalization rates for every single age group. So again, these things continue to be very effective against all variants. They continue to be very safe. You know, around the world, it's been, you know, more than 2.5 billion doses administered. And again, the likelihood of adverse events happening, they do happen, but they're just exceedingly rare. And so right now, what we're focusing on is, again, you know, for people who are immune compromised, the vaccine may not be as effective. And so making sure that those kind of people are able to receive a booster dose to offer some additional protection against the virus is where we're at. And of course, you know, more globally, again, it's a big effort to try and ensure that we're vaccinating the world as quickly as possible.
And I was going to ask you, just to follow up on that point, the data that you're talking about, the information that we have on the safety and effectiveness of these vaccines, this isn't just coming from the U.S. We're getting the same results, the same research, the same type information from Israel and the U.K. and all these different countries around the world who are vaccinating their citizens, right?
That is absolutely correct. And in many ways, we're kind of lucky because countries like Israel have, you know, vaccinated a much higher proportion of their population. They did a little bit earlier than us. And so we're able to kind of see how that data unfolds, which allows us to maybe tailor the strategies and what we're offering in terms of recommendations for booster shots and in who we should be doing those kind of things. So you're absolutely right. We do not live in a bubble in the United States. The entire world is trying to analyze all available data and ensure that they're providing vaccines that are safe and effective for their citizens.
One final question for you, and thank you so much for the time. I'm talking to Dr. Jason Salemi, epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of South Florida College of Public Health and the Morsani College of Medicine. The good, the bad, the ugly of certain treatments, from monoclonal antibody cocktails to ivermectin. What can you tell us about the information that we have on potential treatments if somebody does come down with COVID-19, and in particular, if they start to have a severe case of it?
Yeah, so the good news is, I mean, there are medications out there that are really valuable. So, for example, for sicker people, remdesivir, that is something that is FDA approved. It prevents the virus from replicating inside cells and has been shown to reduce recovery time in patients who are ill. And even less severe cases have been shown to benefit from a 5-day course of the drug. Another one for sicker people is dexamethasone. That's a very cheap and safe corticosteroid. It's usually the most beneficial for the sickest patients. So if somebody's on a ventilator or supplemental oxygen, that's when you'll hear them receiving DEXA or dexamethasone. To prevent severe illness, so, you know, for people who aren't yet very sick but who are infected, you hear a lot about monoclonal antibodies like Regeneron. These are antibodies from people who have already recovered from COVID-19. These types of drugs have been used commonly to combat many diseases, cancers, AIDS, and it's good if it's given early in the infection. It's certainly not as helpful if a patient has already been hospitalized. And so, again, it has emergency use authorization from the FDA. It's recommended by the NIH for non-hospitalized patients. And again, there are some, like those drugs, that are absolutely helpful. Something like ivermectin, you know, ivermectin is actually a really important medication. It's used to kill parasitic worms. It treats things in humans like river blindness, even skin diseases like scabies. So it's not just a horse dewormer, but it's not recommended for use with COVID-19. You know, this all started out when lab tests showed that ivermectin could slow reproduction of the virus, but it's only at extremely high doses that could have serious side effects in humans. And there was recently a big systematic review that was done. They found no evidence to support the use of ivermectin for treating or preventing COVID-19. And I promise the vaccine is a vastly improved alternative to protect yourself from severe illness than ivermectin. And, you know, I think it's because this medication is also used in animals, some people have been using the medication wrong. You should never take a formulation of any drug that's made for your pet. It's just different. And finally, I just even heard today that there are new stories, and I want to address it, about gargling an antiseptic that's known as betadine. People think that that will help with COVID-19. And I want to be very clear, there is zero evidence of that. It's a topical antiseptic. It should never be gargled. It should never be ingested. Swallowing it can lead to nausea, vomiting, kidney problems. And per the manufacturer of betadine itself, they say betadine should only be used to prevent infection in minor cuts, scrapes, and burns. It has not been approved for use with COVID-19. So again, I know that people are kind of struggling for things that work, and I can tell you the vaccines work. That's the best way to go.
I didn't even know about that last one. It's amazing what people have come up with. There's one other drug I wanted to ask you about real quick, because Joe Rogan said that he took this when he was infected with COVID-19, and he also took ivermectin and a whole bunch of different things. But this one stood out to me because I've taken it before, and I don't think it has any ability to really impact COVID-19. Correct me if I'm wrong, but what about Z-Pak?
Oh, yeah, Z-Pak, azithromycin. So, yeah, again, this is just something that is very common. You know, it's a drug that a lot of people take. It's very beneficial in many ways. But it's, again, it's not a drug that has shown any evidence that it can help with COVID-19. The extent to which it will hurt you, again, I don't think it's necessarily that case. But again, there are drugs that are out there for people who have been infected and will help you to prevent severe illness, like the monoclonal antibodies. There are drugs out there that are effective for sicker people, like remdesivir and dexamethasone. And of course, we've got this wonderful vaccine that both reduces your likelihood of getting infected in the first place and reduces your likelihood of severe illness. Any of these other drugs, again, there's just not any definitive evidence that shows that it will really help, you know, prevent you from getting infected or prevent you from getting severely ill.
Dr. Jason Salemi, epidemiologist and associate professor at the University of South Florida College of Public Health and Morsani College of Medicine. Dr. Salemi, where can people find you to learn more about everything that you're keeping an eye on throughout the course of this pandemic?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm no longer on Twitter. I used to have a big social media presence, but right now I primarily serve the public by this: radio interviews, TV interviews, stories on the web, and through my dashboard. If you're looking for really reliable information, not just on Florida, but around the country on cases, hospitalizations, deaths, if you just Google my name, Jason Salemi, S-A-L-E-M-I, and type in dashboard along with that, it'll be the first link that you get. And again, it's got a lot of really useful information. You can contact me through that website, and I'm always trying to improve the quality of the information for people to be able to make evidence-based decisions from COVID-19.
It's really excellent. Thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, Dr. Salemi.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.